101.5 FM, 720 AM. KDON, the talk of Las Vegas.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the number one professional wrestling radio show in Las Vegas. This is the Mark Hoke Show.
The Mark Hoke Show.
One full hour of wrestling news, entertainment, and lots of Sin City surprises from inside the squared circle. Now, let's bring on the host. Here is Mark Hoke.
Ho-ho! Hee-hee! Yeah!
That's what? Happiness right there.
No, it's... I need caffeine. It's my cry for help.
It was close to happiness.
Oh, dear Lord. Welcome to the Mark Hoke Show. I'm Mark Hoke. Thanks for being with us. We have an outstanding show from all around the world of pro wrestling for you here on KDWN 101.5 FM, 720 AM, the talk of Las Vegas. I can't do John Lindquist.
No.
His voice can't. Is impossible to...
That's why he's John Lindquist and you're Mark Hoke.
Now, I can mock him and talk like him, and I've done it to him a few times, but you can't match that amazing voice that you hear in the opens. And by the way, if you ever want to get John, just look him up. He's very easy to find online or get in touch with me. You can drop me a line at on the website or Twitter, Facebook, Mark Hoke Show. Mark Hoke Show on Twitter, MarkHokeShow.com. All sorts of stuff. I'm available.
You're everywhere.
I am. I do tend to be everywhere. When I get into doing stuff, it's not good. And MarkHokeShow@gmail.com. Fish, I was so tired last night.
How tired were you?
Oh, dear Lord. It was not good.
Oh.
It was not good.
I was expecting something better than...
Oh. After a crazy day driving people around.
Should we say good morning to our third member?
We're getting there. I'm just babbling right now because I didn't even introduce you.
I know, but yeah, I'm not as important as our third member.
Well, it's a draw. time limit draw. Of course, Andrew Fish Fane in here as well. You can follow him at the Fish 1969 on Twitter. And the overlord, the king, the master of the domain of future stars of wrestling here in Las Vegas, who, by the way, has a big, big, big shoe coming up.
Really big shoe.
On Friday, September 24th, Survival of the Fittest. Should be a great one. Joe DeFalco is awake. What's up, buddy?
Barely awake, but I'm awake.
Good morning, my friend.
Yes. Big week.
Oh, my God. We're all acting like we were on a plane ride from hell.
Nice intro. Look at that segue.
I didn't know if that's where I was going to start, but maybe we should just get it over with.
I think we should. Joe, did you happen to see that Dark Side of the Ring on the plane ride from hell?
You talking to me?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're Joe.
No, I didn't see it, but I've heard about it for years.
Oh, the show.
It's like I'm not really shocked by what I had heard. I had heard about the whole thing with Flair and certain things that went on there. I can't believe how crazy it's all gotten. I woke up and Dreamer has been suspended and it's like, wow.
Yeah, what's shocking to me is that there are repercussions now some 19 years after the plane ride.
So let's now
they care about it.
Yeah, let's set this up a little bit in case people out there don't know what we're talking about. There is a show called Dark Side of the Ring that airs on Vice. They're in their third season now, and they kind of take a look at, the darker side of wrestling. And the show just came back with the second half of their third season on Thursday night, and the story was on the plane ride from hell, which was a chartered flight coming back from a WWE tour in Europe. They had just finished up a pay-per-view called Insurrection, and, there's no other words for it. All hell broke loose on that plane.
Without question.
And it has been wrestling lore for 20 years now, people talking about the plane ride from hell. But I don't know if it ever really got cast in such a negative light as it did on this show, because there were stories about Vince McMahon and Kurt Angle wrestling. That's cute. Michael Hayes got his ponytail cut off by X-Pac. That's cute.
Brock Lesnar and Kurt Hennig decided to have a full-on match in the middle of a plane.
They got in a fight. Kurt played a little trick on Brock, and Brock got mad. They had a little scuffle. Everybody got drunk. Ric Flair run around naked, except for his robe. But now this episode kind of took it to a different place where the one of the major proponents on this one was a flight attendant that they found that was on this flight who told a very compelling story about everything that happened, how much of a nightmare this was, you know, that she was worried that Brock and Kurt were going to break through the wall of the plane, that Scott Hall tried to lick her in the morning when she was trying to serve breakfast, Ric Flair when he was doing his little thing
helicopter
with the robe, and yes, he was helicoptering, which Ric Flair has been known to do a few times, but Ric Flair went back to the galley where this flight attendant was and cornered her,
basically,
and you know, tried to get her to touch Space Mountain. It was, you know, just a story after story. They even had a little bit about Terry Runnels saying that at the pay-per-view, Brock Lesnar exposed himself to her and her.
No selling it.
And you know, Dustin Rhodes is like, don't say anything. Don't say anything. Let it go. Which kind of led into that whole thing with Flair. And it really turned this into a nightmare. And there's been fallout from it. Tommy Dreamer was on the show and kind of was a little bit
insensitive. I think the best word to say from what he said was insensitive, because what he said was, it doesn't offend me, but apparently in this day and age it will offend some people. He goes, then again, my double ponytail will offend some people because I'm 50 years old.
Yeah, he really was very casual about it, and Impact Wrestling suspended him for that. And now Ric Flair lost, at least for the moment. They didn't say he lost the sponsorship, but his ads for CarShield have been pulled, at least for the moment, because of all this. And Rick's now trying to defend himself. The show said that Ric had said before that he denied the allegations, but you know, they didn't say whether they tried to reach him or not, which really blew me away. But all of a sudden, the plane ride from hell has implications 2 decades later, which is unbelievable. Well,
what I found interesting, and Jim Ross has said this, he said, you know, they fired Scott Hall immediately. And he goes, there were absolutely no repercussions for Ric Flair because Ric Flair was a made man.
Yeah, Henning got fired. Scott Hall got fired.
Right. And nothing happened to Ric Flair at all.
Yeah. So
Brock Lesnar.
Lesnar didn't get anything either. And, you know, I hate to say he did the worst thing, because obviously, you know, cornering a woman when you're naked is not the coolest thing in the world to do.
And telling a woman to lick you or asking her if he can. Scott Hall, what Scott Hall did, but Scott Hall was drugged. RVD, I thought, was brilliant on this whole thing. I loved watching RVD talk about it.
You know, there were a few things that struck me about this episode, and because I'm having been a journalist for a long time, I see other questions and other thoughts that I had. First, I was really surprised when you hear about a situation like that, and having run group events and had people in the facility, yes, they made a comment. Well, Rick wanted that third car to boost because they were on the tarmac for 7 hours before they took off.
Because of weather
in Connecticut. So they got stuck on the tarmac for 7 hours, which is why everybody got so messed up, because they served them basically three mini bars. Three of them.
Yeah, three cards full of alcohol. And these aren't the little mini bottles. These were the full size bottles.
Now, and the attendant even admitted, well, you know, you got the third cart and we just couldn't control them and they were just taking off the cart. And having run events and having to keep them under control, I don't care if it's God. I'm not giving them that third cart. There's no way. I mean, you can say what you want, but if I don't have the people to control these guys, which they obviously didn't, you know, Sportjet blew it to me that they didn't have the right people on this flight. And they had been touring with them through the whole tour when they were over there. They were there for 3 days. So apparently they were all getting friendly and everything. And, you know, who knows what, if anything, happened before that. But, man, you've got to have the airline has to take charge of that situation, number one. You have to. Either get those guys off the plane if you're going to be stuck out there for 7 hours. You don't give them that booze. You make sure that you've got the right people on that plane that, God forbid something happens, you can handle it.
Yeah, but you heard Justin Credible say it. He said it didn't matter how much, if Ric Flair wanted, he was going to pay however much it was going to cost.
Don't care. I'm going to say this. I don't care.
I know you don't, but when it comes down to it, money is money. And if Ric Flair was going to pay that money, and that's what Justin Credible said. He goes, he was going to get it no matter what. He didn't care if it was a few thousand dollars.
If I'm seeing these guys getting messed up and I'm seeing signs of trouble, I'm like, guys, I'm going to Vince McMahon. I'm going to Jim Ross. And I'm saying, look, this is a situation that could get out of hand. They want a third cart of booze. I don't want to give it to them. What are we going to do? But Vince was all in this crazy.
Maybe you can speak to this as the head of a company like that. To me, it seemed interesting. Jim Ross said, it was my job. I was supposed to take care of it. But at some point, it shouldn't be Vince McMahon. If Vince McMahon had stepped in at some point and said, hey, knock it off, everyone would have listened. Shouldn't it have been his position to do something like that or no?
Yeah, I guess it would be his position, but from what I'm hearing, because Mick Foley posted the thing, that Vince McMahon wasn't there. So, you know, those kind of parts of the story are a little conflicted now.
Yeah, because on the show they were saying that Vince and Linda were both in the very front of the plane, and that the first class of the first class cabins, they were saying.
And Mick Foley says they were not on that flight. So, again, it's already conflicting on to what they're there. But Vince McMahon's also the guy that got into a wrestling match with Kurt Angle on a plane. So how much is he going to listen?
To him, it's a bunch
of guys having fun, blowing off steam, whatever. And they did it in bars, whether it was, you know, Undertaker, Godfather crew, beating the crap out of people.
Oh, he almost did it again.
it's how things were back in those days, you know, right, wrong, indifferent.
Right.
They did it, and they knew they were going to get away with it. And you know, it's horrifying in 2021, but in 1995, it was just another day. Like, how many other European tours did they go on that the behavior was exactly the same, but nobody really brought it up?
Right, and JR said at the time it was very much a case of boys being boys.
Yeah, and you know, it's there is a context there, you know, having been in sports a lot and coached teams for a long time. Yeah, you goof around. You do stuff. The problem was, to me, with the whole thing was supervision on everybody's parts. I mean, the wrestlers are obviously responsible for their actions.
They're adults, right?
You know, you can't do that stuff. You know, you can't. You know, Brock Lesnar needed to keep his cool and not attack Kurt Hennig on the plane to the point where you could have smashed a wall out,
right,
and decompressed the plane. You got to use your head a little bit.
To me, they made it sound like that was as big a deal as Dustin Runnels singing to Terry Runnels on the PA. But
yeah,
to me, I'm like, see, to me, that was nothing. And they made that seem like a huge deal, too. Yeah, so that was,
well, you know, have you ever had your eyebrow shaved in the middle of a flight to back home?
No, I have not.
You know, I have not either. But people take that, you know, differently. And it was like, you know, I saw a post on Facebook, one of the guys I know, and he was posting about how, you know, vile it is, and that's why you don't tell people you're wrestling fans. And I responded with, do you think it's any different in the music business?
No.
It's way worse. In Hollywood, we've been seeing it for 20 years. When people are in a position of power, they generally are going to take it.
Yeah, and that's why I like Mike Chioda's statement. He said, you know, when you go on a plane, you wear sunglasses and you wear a hat, because that way if they're going to do something, you have a chance to wake up if they pull off your hat or take off your sunglasses.
That was brilliant. You know,
you get caught on camera, they can't identify you because you got a hat and glasses.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
See, Joe's always thinking the right way.
What a wise, wise man Joe DeFalco is. Of course, we're on the Mark Hoke Show. I'm Mark Hoke, Andrew Fishfane, Joe DeFalco, talking about the world of professional wrestling and this whole dark side of the ring situation. Guys, when does this blow over? Is this going away anytime soon?
What's funny is it was the lowest rated Dark Side of the Ring of all time.
I didn't see that.
I didn't see that either.
they had the overnight ratings, and generally they're always in about the 200,000 range. And this one was the lowest, or the second lowest one of all the ones that they put out. And I'm pretty sure when they run the repeat, it's going to be the highest.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's actually a brilliant point. I'm sure it will be. It was just, like I said, I'm not shocked at what happened as much as I'm shocked that there's 20 years later we're having repercussions, like the fact that Tommy Dreamer has been suspended.
And Hulk Hogan and now Ric Flair, the two biggest stars in wrestling history, are pretty much canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough. Yeah, and, you know, I think it was funny because I had watched the preview of the second half of the season with Chris Jericho.
Yeah, I watched that. That was actually brilliant.
And the show creators, Evan Husney and Jason Eisner. And you almost got a sense that something was coming because they were talking a lot about how, well, when we do the show, we got to balance being fans and telling the truth and telling these stories, and it's hard sometimes. You know, so obviously you knew something big was going to come up. And I think there's a reason that this show was placed first on the season, because obviously it's, you know, just looking down the topics, it's probably going to get more attention than the other.
Well, ones, so. I got a question for you. So Dark Side of the Ring has a lot of stories that people didn't really know about, and, you know, it doesn't make the wrestling business look good. But Chris Jericho is the host of it. Is there any heat on Chris Jericho for being a major part of this, you know, show that really trashes professional wrestling and makes it look bad?
I think to a point they're probably, especially after this.
It's because, funny because...
Because, I just can't believe they didn't call Rick to give him a chance to get on camera on this. You know, as a journalist, you know, with that story and getting so detailed and saying, well, here's the flight attendant who's going to tell this story. Boy, I tell you, I would have made that phone call to Rick. I really would have.
Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't even want to put he declined comment, because that to me looks worse. If he says he declined comment on it, it looks worse than if they don't say anything at all.
He's commenting now, and he says he's going to come and talk about it sometime. But as for Jericho,
I think it's half and half.
Some of these stories, because they've been told, I think have benefited wrestling, and I think some of them have really brought some things to light that I think was important to know. What about the Grizzly Smith thing? I mean, you think about that story with, you know, what happened with Jake and Robin and Sam Houston and that entire family. And, nobody knew what Grizzly was doing.
I think you're going to see the same thing next week when the Chris Canyon one comes out. I think people are going to learn stuff about Canyon that they didn't know. And I think that's going to be huge for certain members or parts of the population.
You know, you look at, like, you know, and I actually have the episode list in front of me. The Bruiser Brody story. Great story.
Loved it.
The Von Erich story. I think that was a story that was important that story got told.
The Bob Abrams story I thought was very good, too.
Oh, Jesus.
The cowboy and cocaine, what is it, cocaine and cowboy boots or something?
God, that was unreal. And, you know, the great...
Right, but I had heard that story 30 years ago.
Sure.
Bob Abrams at UWF, because I lived in Long Island, and he was the guy who was running out of there and using all those ex-WWF guys, and I remember, I guess, they did a show. It was actually on Pluto TV. I saw one of the matches. It was Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and somebody else. But it was here in Vegas, and it was their big pay-per-view, and they had, like, 27 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That whole thing was... I still remember that.
But
that
I thought the episode itself was wonderful. Like I said, I look forward to seeing the Canyon one, because I think there's a lot of stuff about Canyon that I don't know.
You know, and you know, there's some good stuff with the David Schultz one. It was fun to see David Schultz again. And, you know, like I said, they've done some things where I think that they've benefited wrestling. And, you know, I think overall for the business, sometimes these stories coming out are important to kind of teach everybody lessons from the past and realize, you know, look, there's some things that went on that we can't let happen again. So, you know, there's some good, and then obviously there's some bad, like what happened this week. So.
Right, and I don't think Jericho gets heat, because I think Jericho is looked at as, you know what, he's willing to go out and tell some of these stories that maybe we don't want to be seen, so he...
Well, plus he's getting paid to do it.
Yeah, of course.
You know, tell me one of those guys, if they weren't asked to narrate these shows, would be like, oh, I'm not going to do it.
No, you're right.
You know, I don't like the topic, I'm not going to do it. Come on. Let them get real on that. So, yeah, I think Chris is okay. So there you go. Wow, we went a long time on that Dark Side of the Ring thing. So that means I'm going to save the Big E win for the second half We'll get into some other topics here. Hey, how about AEW? Another ratings victory.
Oh, stop.
In the
18-49
in the 18-49 demo. That's the one they list. Beat him out by
Joe is not impressed. By the AEW win.
Everybody looks for the win and how they can get it. You know, when two companies go head to head, usually it's, you know, whoever gets the most viewers. That's like, you know, when you play a baseball game. Yeah, but you know, the first four innings we dominated and they squeaked by in the other part of the game. So we're gonna get some points in that.
Yeah, of course, Raw did crush them on total viewers. It was about 1.9-ish to 1.1 ballpark. Yeah. But they beat them in the 18-49, which is when they list shows on cable listings.
I had some interesting conversations yesterday with an AEW wrestler.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
How'd that go?
It went well. You know, talking about using the guy. And known him for years, and you know, right now he's not extremely excited about what's been going on.
And that was my biggest thing about AEW is everyone's talking about how amazing it is, how great it is, how fantastic it is. And I said, but there are guys that I'm sure were promised certain things that aren't going to get delivered on those promises because of the 8 million names that all of a sudden they're bringing in.
Well, and you run into that, you know, as someone who coached sports for a long time, you know, when you first go into a program. And you're taking over, you have the kids you have, but eventually, you know, some better ones usually come in and
but you know, have as to you're have training some them, loyalty you, to the kids that started with you, and there's no loyalty there at all.
But but how many people have they released?
Well, I wasn't talking to Fuego del Sol, so it was, you know,
yeah,
I wasn't talking
that.
To somebody who's just happy to be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, some of those guys that got things started, they had to realize that at some point there were going to be some bigger names coming in. And
yes and no. I mean, I don't think anyone could have seen the amount of names that were coming in.
I'm sure there's a shock. I'm sure there's a shock that all of a sudden, how are these guys here? I mean, if you'd have asked me a year and a half ago, would CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, and Adam Cole be in AEW, what would you have said?
I would say there's a better chance of them all being in WWE, obviously.
Of course not. And there's a lot of guys.
I disagree. I would have said I would thought CM Punk would never go back to WWE.
Oh, I never thought he would either. I just figured he'd stay home.
I would think that from the early conversations and being in Chicago for the first one, I thought that CM Punk, if he ever came back to wrestle, that's where he was going to be. Now, the other guys, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know. I didn't think that. And also, Adam Cole shot down the rumor that he was supposed to be a manager for Keith Lee.
Ugh.
Oh, that didn't actually happen?
Oh, God.
That's what supposedly Adam Cole stated.
Ew. That's horrible. What kind of idiotic plan was that? Oh, wait.
Yeah, he was going to be a manager for somebody else. I'm only kidding. I couldn't think of a name that quick. That would have been like, oh, even worse.
EC3. Sorry.
Yeah. Wow, you're pulling that one back.
EC3 wrestling Braun Strowman on their own thing, on the narrative.
Huh.
Did you see that?
No, I did not.
That's an interesting pairing.
Yeah, I guess they're friends. And EC3 did a match with, I believe, Matt Cardona that aired exclusively on like his own YouTube channel, and you could buy it. And now I guess it's Strowman's first match since being released, and it's going to be versus EC3 because he's trying to create his own narrative and I guess do things his way. And it's not even a company, it's just a one-off match that you can stream and pay for.
Ooh, we're going Zack Ryder on this one. Woo woo woo.
Lord.
I'm sorry. I didn't do it loudly. Come on.
Thank goodness.
I mean, I could have. That would have been a horrible thing.
No, that's all right. Thanks.
Do you want me to fish?
No, thank you.
No? Okay. Just making sure. Oh, my God. Yeah. So that's very interesting. Braun Strowman taking charge of his own career. Coming back, we got about a minute-ish to go. So when we come back, we're going to talk about Big E's winning the WWE Championship.
Yeah.
We'll to maybe get in some NXT talk.
And I want to talk about how ridiculous the WWE is when they advertise something that kind of blows the water out of what's going to happen before. Well, you'll see what I'm talking about when we come back.
Yeah, and we got, real quick, we'll touch on Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, Rampage. Impact had a good show last night as we're getting ready for them to come to town on Friday. Or I think it's, is that Friday night, Joe?
They're coming October 23rd.
Oh, October 23rd. Okay.
So, no, it's
Bound
not Friday.
For okay. Glory.
Okay. So, that one's coming up, too, and some other fun stuff. So, we're just getting ready to roll into break here. And, yeah, there we go. Yeah, there it is. I was waiting for the music.
I understand that.
Yeah. All right. So, we will be back. Andrew Fishfane, Joe DeFalco, Future Stars of Wrestling, and little old me, Mark Hoke. Thanks for being with us on KDWN. Stop looking to be funny.
Little old you.
Whatever. Whatever. We'll be right back.
FM, 720 AM. KDON, the talk of Las Vegas. This is the Mark Hoke Show.
The Mark Hoke Show.
Here again, your host, Mark Hoke.
Mark Hoke. That's me.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, it's all I got today, man. It's all I got. Andrew Fishfane, Joe DeFalco on the line as well. Talking pro wrestling. So,
since we're going wrestling, since this is one area
we're going wrestling, that is the show.
Joe, I have another question for you. So WWE is booking the Extreme Rules match between the Demon and Roman Reigns for the Universal title. Yet they're running commercials saying that the show in Saudi Arabia in October, it's Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar for the Universal title. Isn't that kind of self-defeating, saying that you're already fighting for a match after the match? You know what I'm saying? They're already saying that Reigns is going to defeat Balor.
Well, it's not necessarily that. We've had to do things to where we've had a smaller schooler show, but we're trying to promote the big show that we were doing at, say, Sam's Town. So, you know, we ended up doing a swerve just to do it. We had Cross and Hammerstone were scheduled to be in a steel cage match in, like, 4 weeks. So two weeks prior, we were going to have a school show, and Hammerstone was going to defend the title. At the time, we didn't know who he was going to defend it against, but we did this giant swerve to where this young kid who was pretty much terrible, but he was like a manager who was really over, and we had Cross get involved, and the guy beat Hammerstone, and the crowd went crazy, and then he just got added into the championship match because he was the champion. So odds are Balor's not winning, but, you know, it's possible they do some kind of giant swerve because, you know, you don't, in that situation, you don't know what the deal is with Lesnar. So are they going to make him lose in Saudi Arabia? Because it seems like those guys have their favorites, and guys like The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels wrestle on those shows, and Jericho did back in the day, and it was the most money he said he ever got to wrestle. So, you know, Goldberg wrestles on there. You know, there's talk of that happening. And now Goldberg gets to beat Lashley because Lashley's not the champion.
Right.
And now the guy who's the Saudis who are paying all the money want to go over can.
That makes a lot of sense.
You know, it must be fun to have a job where you can just do a giant swerve.
Yeah.
It's got to be cool. I don't get to do a giant swerve.
But the problem is dealing with the other, you know, 90% of the annoyance and the aggravation of trying to get to the one thing you do like to do,
now,
which is run the shows.
When you have a storyline going, do you have an end point and work your way back from the end point, or do you have a start point and you work your way forward?
Well, initially it's the start point, and we're like, okay, this looks like we have, you know, a setup of what we're going to do. And then we plan out. And, like, for example, Survival of the Fittest, September 24th, we do where it's some Survivor Series type matches because I was always a fan of that. So, you know, we got the MK Army, which has Sam Adonis from AAA and NWA in it, going against Hammerstone's team because The storyline is the manager, MK, tried to recruit Hammerstone, and Hammerstone turned him down and laid him out. So now MK's recruited guys to try to take out the heavyweight champion. So, you know, that's part of the setup to November when we have our next big show, kind of like, you know, kind of like WWE. We have our own little versions of WrestleMania and, you know, SummerSlam, and we have our big four. And so November 27th, we do a show called No Escape, and the show will be more like we'll probably do two or three steel cage matches. And the idea is trying to link everything over the last few months to finalize, you know, the feud at No Escape inside the steel cage. We're fortunate where we don't have Monday Night Raw the next day, and then we just give the rematch away for free. So.
Yeah, there you go. You know what? I think Joni's got to work for me Friday night. I need to go to this. Joni's in there smiling. She's like, no.
Joni has a life. It's a Friday
Joni's
night.
Joni's my show producer.
She's doing something on Friday night, trust me.
Yeah, well. Bribes can be made. You know, I'll do a Ric Flair. I'll get her no money.
I thought you were in a helicopter.
Wow, you are a moron. But speaking of incoherent storytelling, let's get into WWE. Big E is now the WWE champion. Cashes in Money in the Bank.
Said he was going to do it all day.
Thanks to Bobby Lashley after he's beaten up Randy Orton, somehow getting his knee destroyed by a table that I didn't see hit his leg, but okay. And I don't know, Lashley became the babyface on that. It was just me.
When did he become the babyface?
Well, he got hurt, and then Big E comes out and jumps him. You're not supposed to do that.
He didn't jump him, and you know what? Lashley actually fought back more than most people do.
Lashley's
in
the ring limping around, and, you know, he's hurt, and Big E comes out, I'm going to cash in, and Lashley's like, I'm hurt, and nope, I'm jumping you right now. They flipped roles. They really did, if you take a second and think about it.
No, they didn't.
Because... How many times does the baby faces the hurt one, and the heel takes advantage of it?
But that's the whole idea. That's the whole idea of the Money in the Bank cash, and you take advantage.
But you're
of the
supposed
situation.
To be the virtuous Big E.
No, you're not. You take advantage of the situation.
But obviously,
you're right. It is a heel move. But, you know, John Cena did it, and it doesn't matter. You know, that's what makes it more difficult when the baby faces the guy. You know, when we do our own version, totally different. We call it the cash in the case. So it's like nothing to do with Money in the Bank. Okay? Because I'm very creative, and I basically go out and have creative, original ideas.
Absolutely.
And the cash in the case was... You know, you looked at the Money in the Bank and said, yeah, that was nice, but the cash in the case is way better.
Oh, my God, yeah. I'll take the cash. Give me the money, man.
But right now we have a heel who is coming in and dastardly trying to take advantage of the situation. And so far he's had four or five opportunities, but he's decided it wasn't the right time. But who knows? It's survival of the fittest. You know, there's a rumor he's going to be in the building, even though he's not scheduled. So it could be cash in the case.
Well,
and the thing is, you can cash in for any title you want at FSW.
Oh, nice!
Yeah,
that's convenient.
That's how Hammerstone won the heavyweight championship by defeating a match that was going on between the former Kevin Karrion Kross and Sean Ricker, LA Knight.
Wow. What that sneaky Hammerstone. Good for him, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, anyway, back to Big E. I personally think that this was a massive reaction to what happened at All Out.
I totally disagree with you.
You have, well, and hear my reasoning here. This was supposed to happen at the draft, which I think is completely worthless at this point. WWE draft, I was at one. And I was, okay, whatever. You're all WWE guys. You've all been switching around. Draft sucks. But they push it up. They do this kind of a weird finish to make it happen. And, you know, and everybody's happy for Big E. Everybody loves Big E. He's very popular in the locker room. But you mentioned this when we were talking about before the show. It felt rushed. It felt really rushed getting Big E to that point.
It did.
And the reason and my contention is they rushed it because Raw's ratings sucked. They got beat in the 18 to 49 demo. We got to do something. And now all of a sudden, the next week, now we've got Roman Reigns coming over to and the Bloodline coming over to Raw.
I think it has less to do with AEW, more to do with the fact that A, it was the first time this year they were going against Monday Night Football because it was the first game of Monday Night Football, and B, because the guys at USA said, hey, look, SmackDown right now is destroying Raw. Raw is supposed to be your flagship show. We need something big on Raw too. So I think they were more trying to bring it up to the level of SmackDown rather than competing with AEW.
Joe, what do you think?
To be honest, I think the whole plan obviously was if Big E's winning the Money in the Bank, he's going to win the heavyweight title. It's going to be a feel-good story. But I don't believe they got to the point where they built it up. Like, when Kofi won the belt, it was kind of like this weird thing where he kind of got put into place, and all of a sudden the crowd wanted Kofi Kingston. And they kind of gave it that little slow build. He didn't win at the first pay-per-view, but then he finally won, and the crowd went bananas. It was organic.
Right.
With Big E, you know, yeah, it was like, we know he's going to win, but they really haven't done much to establish him. You know, he was more of a guy.
He's a comedy guy.
Is in the crew, yeah. You know. And he didn't really differentiate himself as this singles guy, which they started to a little bit, but then they pulled back. And, yeah, it's great, but it was like I don't think Lashley did all he could do as the heavyweight champion of the way they built him up to just take the belt off him like that. So it just became – so it was kind of a weird thing, and it's like, you know, as you said, they're going up against Monday Night Football, so AEW wasn't the thought. They're on different days, so it isn't like this head-to-head competition. They could only control what they can, and they wanted to probably do something that, you know, especially a great football game that it ended up being. You know, they did a lot better than probably most people would have thought for the first week in a highly competitive game that, you know, went into overtime.
Well, now here's my concern with all this is the hotshot era back in WWE. Are we going to be, for those that don't know, and Fish and I were talking about this too, is that the current definition of a hot shot is we're going to put a pay-per-view quality match on television. But what it used to be in the territory days was, hey, my house shows, you know, I'm running a promotion, my house shows aren't doing real well, so we're going to start doing a bunch of quick title changes to get everybody excited so we can sell some tickets. The word gets around that, hey, you can't miss a show because, oh, the title's going to change. You know, the titles are changing hands. We don't want to miss even the little show in Ely or the show in Pahrump. We got to make sure we get to every show because if we don't, we're going to miss something. But you sacrifice the storyline to do it. And I think that WWE, because their writing's a little incoherent, you know, is now, God, are we gonna start seeing hotshotting coming back and worse with the world title?
Well, hotshotting back in WCW days was when, you know, all of a sudden Goldberg beats Hulk Hogan on national TV for free. Nowadays, everything's through the network, and it's got to be on Peacock, so there isn't standalone pay-per-views. So the main shows are Raw and SmackDown. You have to make people watch because regardless of everything, that's what they use to dictate how they're going to make money. And you have to make sure Raw and SmackDown have these quality matches. That's why you see Lashley and Randy Orton. And you're going to see all those things because in this day and age, it's probably better to have the title changed on Monday Night Raw than it is on Extreme Rules these days because you know how many people are watching Monday Night Raw and you need to do something to get the people excited to continue watching because, again, now they're, you know, look at the ratings. Oh, Raw did great. It had 1.9 million viewers. You know, 15 years ago, it was like, oh, my God, Raw only did 4 million viewers. They're going downhill. They're done.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, back in the day, the top shows, by the way, did around 9 million.
And 9 million. Yeah.
Is it really that big a difference? Really 7 million difference?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Wow.
And I do the same things where sometimes it gets stagnant and like, yeah, well, you know, when we were doing, you know, 6 to 8 casino shows a year, you know, the high octanes at the school kind of like, you know, set up the stories. To us, that was, I treated these high octanes as Monday Night Raw. That was our Monday Night Raw. The pay-per-view was the casino shows. And when we had the Young Bucks in, that's what we did. It was like, you know what, we need to make these shows because for us, those shows are extremely important. Because we need people to come to those shows. That way they'll care enough to go to the casino shows. So that's what we did. The Young Bucks came in and I, you know, signed them up to work a couple of different shows. And the first show was at the, you know, the FSW arena, and we had them win the titles. And now people will be like, oh crap, the Young Bucks won the titles at the school show. You know, hopefully it encourages some more people to come to the school show. So we're in, especially in the indies, we're in a different situation than WWE because they're doing those random house shows everywhere that nothing really happens and they do absolutely nothing. Nobody cares. So, you know, I get it. Nowadays, you need to do stuff on Monday Night Raw and SmackDown because that's the catapult for your whole business.
Yep, there you go. Well, speaking of doing stuff on Monday nights, we're going to do something on Sunday morning. You know what that is, guys.
The snap call.
It's time for the snap call.
Because we like to make our guests squirm and suffer, let's put them through the toughest grind in professional wrestling. Get ready, everyone. It's time for the snap call.
Oh, and this should be a good one, too, because it's a sleep-deprived snap call.
Okay.
The fish. Basically, going to ask the guys some questions, give them a few choices, and they get to pick their best answer in a rapid fire, not quite so detailed fashion.
Is that a hint?
It's always a hint, Joe. All right. First one. And I have one from last week that's going to make somebody cringe, I think. But this will be fun. Let's see. Well, Impact is coming to Vegas next month. And Joe DeFalco got booked on the show. Did you hear about this?
I did not hear about this.
What's his role? A spin the wheel, change D-Lo's deal segment where Joe gets to change the finish of whatever match he spins. Referee of a zoo animals match between Moose and Rhino with him dressed as a zookeeper outfit in a zookeeper outfit feeding fish snacks to the participants when they do something they like. Or DeFalco is in the ring as he takes on the returning Tessa Blanchard. Fish.
Oh, he's the referee and dresses a zookeeper.
I like that one. Joe?
Yeah, I'll change the finish of, as long as I can finish the change, the finish of at least 4 or 5 matches.
Wow, greedy spinner there. I want to see Joe take on Tessa. God, that would be fun to watch. Oh, my God. 2 minutes.
There's a lot of heat there when we had her. She wasn't happy with some things.
She's never happy from whatever.
So I don't feel as bad, you know, fast forward 1.5 years later, you know.
Understood. How does this last Dark Side of the Ring episode affect the relationship between their team and the wrestling community? Much more reluctant to talk to the guys. It won't change. Or when the phone rings, they'll answer to make sure they don't get thrown under the bus. Joe?
Yeah, absolutely.
After what happened to Ric Flair? Yeah, I think so. I think I'm definitely answering the call. Speaking of that show, Jim Ross looked a little uncomfortable. What would Jim Ross have rather been doing than being interviewed for that Dark Side of the Ring episode? Participating in a battery acid chugging challenge, getting his legs gnawed by rabid beavers, or having a proctology exam with cactus-covered gloves? Fish.
Proctology exam with cactus-covered gloves.
Joe?
On the sidelines of an Oklahoma game.
Oh, that'd be too easy. That'd be too easy. He looked so horrified to be there. It wasn't good. What will be the final result of the Heyman-Lesnar-Reigns triangle? Heyman turns on Reigns. Lesnar is the champ. Heyman screws over Lesnar and presents him with suitcases back to South Dakota, or... And I am the advocate for the reigning, defending WWE World Heavyweight and Universal Champion, Big E. Huh?
I'd love to see Big E as a Heyman guy, but I think he's going to end up screwing Lesnar and sticking with Reigns.
Joe?
The smart move would be stay with Reigns because he's on the show every week. And I'm not sure if Paul gets paid by appearance, but if he does, then he needs to stick with Reigns.
I want him to go with Big E. Did you notice Big E was hanging out with him a lot? Saying hi to him a lot?
Yeah, but how would he get in the match? He's already cashed in.
Oh, there's still a title to win. We could figure it out. But I think that would be hilarious. Let's see. TV ratings for the AEW Arthur Ashe show coming up this week. 1.2 million or less, 1.2 to 1.49 million, or over 1.5 million fish.
Over 1.5.
Wow, going big.
They've been doing like 1.2 now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, well, I don't know why it would go up.
Okay.
Same thing.
I don't think they quite hit 1.5, but I think they're going to do a pretty good number.
Joe, you're so pragmatic.
Yeah, that's all right. Last one. We need a crazy match stipulation for the AEW Arthur Ashe show. What should it be? Last person who can't take it anymore, mixed tag team match between referees Paul Turner and Aubrey Edwards taking on John McEnroe and Serena Williams, which would be entertaining, the jaw-jacking. If the Young Bucks lose, Jim Cornette gets to hit them with a tennis racket 5 times each. It's tennis. Or a balls-to-the-balls match. Fish?
What's a balls-to-the-balls match?
Well, you got tennis balls.
But who's getting the balls-to-the-balls?
I would imagine the loser.
Right now, I'll stay with the Young Bucks getting hit by a tennis racket with Jim Cornette.
Joe, you're a promoter. Which one would you go with?
That would be highly entertaining. It would be nice to see Kenny King there to say hi to Jim Cornette.
That would be something. There you go. There's your snap call, guys.
Jim Cornette is a very divisive, polarizing individual.
He doesn't like the Bucks either.
No, I know.
Could you imagine that if somehow they got him to come in and do that? Tony Khan likes him. He was singing his praises last week.
Yeah, he put him over, you know. And you know, the Vince Russos, the Cornettes, who are very opinionated. You know, some of the stuff Cornette says is out there and somewhat embarrassing, but a lot of what him and Russo say is legit. You know, it's what a lot of other people, you know, sometimes think but are afraid to say.
Well, my question for you is, a lot of people say Vince Russo is a genius. A lot of people say he was the ruination of wrestling. Joe, what do you think of Vince Russo and his ideas vis-a-vis wrestling?
I think Vince Russo is like a lot of wrestling people, that he has good ideas, but he also has a ton of miserable ideas. And when he was with WWF back in the day, he was able to be filtered, yep, and they only picked and choose what they thought would be good. When he was running WCW, he didn't have that filter, and he did what he wanted to do. And sometimes it was, horrendous. Because there was no Vince McMahon in WCW to say, this is terrible. Just like now when we watch WWE, it's like how they can create the bloodline and some of these stories are fantastic. And then some of them are like, how did this make television?
Exactly.
Like, who thought this was going to be a good idea? So, you know.
Yeah, kind of.
That's my thought on Vince Russo.
Yeah, there you go. And by the way, happy birthday to Jim Cornette. Just turned 60, if I'm correct.
Really?
Yeah, he's got got birthday cakes flying around all over Twitter, and everybody's saying hi. So happy birthday!
Whose birthday?
Jim Cornette.
Oh, whatever.
Oh man,
he did manage the greatest tag team in the history of professional wrestling.
I might not disagree with that. The Midnight Express were absolutely amazing. Part of the reason that I do respect a lot of what he says, I don't agree with everything, but.
And not Dennis Condrey or the love guy.
You're talking about Sweet Stan Lane and Beautiful Bobby?
Yeah, now that was the team.
The Condrey team was pretty good, though, too.
Yeah.
They were both good.
I'm with Joe. I like Sweet Stan and Beautiful Bobby.
Well, sure. I mean, if you're telling me, if I was taking one, sure. But they were both great teams.
That's like saying that the Steve McMichael Four Horsemen with Paul Roma.
No, that is not saying.
Well, Paul Roma wasn't with Mongo McMichael.
No, I know.
Paul Roma, got a raw deal.
I think he did too. He got put in a spot he shouldn't have been in.
Look at Pretty Wonderful, how good they were.
Yeah,
That was a fun team. I did want to talk about NXT real fast. We've got about like 3 minutes-ish. The new look debuted. You know, the crayon box and, puking all over the logo.
And Tommaso Ciampa's the champion.
Tommaso Ciampa's the champion. Samojo had to vacate the belt due to some sort of undisclosed injury. Tommaso Ciampa wins the
He was his age.
Oh.
They're trying to get younger, so they got Ciampa. He's only like 37.
Yeah. But Ciampa wins the title, and of course we had the son of Rick Steiner showing up, but you can't say Rick Steiner. Can you believe that? You got some history there, but you can't say that. They did get a dog face gremlin.
Why reference. Can they not say, why?
I don't know. It's another WWE thing, but I don't know. NXT, interesting way to kick off the new era. Joe, I'm guessing you didn't like it too much.
Well, I don't understand. It's like, okay, I know they don't want to use people's names because of the copyright issue and stuff like that. But there's no copyright issue to say, hey, this is Rick Steiner's kid and it's Scott Steiner's nephew. Like, that only increases the value of you making money off this person.
Yeah, I don't get it. So he is known as Braun Breaker, B-R-O-N. Breaker
to
with
not
two
be
K's.
Confused with his cousin Braun Strowman.
I knew that was coming.
What is this Braun stuff? But he beat LA Knight. We had the wedding, by the way.
Yeah, Dexter Lumis and who did he marry?
It's the Index.
And if they can't do the weddings like Chuck and Billy, I'm not interested.
Wow. Oh dear God. But
I like the Test and Stephanie wedding myself.
Yeah, but, you know, a brighter set, but more cheesy stuff coming to NXT, it looks like.
It's meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah, pretty much. Well,
yeah,
that's good.
You know what? It's not going to be as different as people seem to make it believe, you know.
I don't think so either, but.
You know, right. I was excited. I thought, you know, we had the women's title. Then we had Ricker,
Joe, we gotta wrap
LA Knight,
it.
And thing. It was like, we could have two FSW champions win the title in the same night on NXT.
That would have been cool. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week. Hit us up on Twitter, at Mark Hoke Show, Facebook, The Mark Hoke Show, website, markhokeshow.com. Kind of a common thread there. So we would love to see you follow us. And, of course, podcasts on Podbean, plus all of your favorite sites. Check us out. Fish, Joe, great show. Thank you again. I'm Mark Hoke. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next time on The Mark Hoke Show. Have a great Sunday.